Man, that music means we are here live for Riasis on Sunday night on the 30th of March, 2024. And yes, Kathy, you may have to bring that mic up a little closer to you for right now, or just get it right
I'll
there for now.
A
and
little
I'll,
bit more. How's
yeah,
that?
That's good right there. There we go. And then we'll get your guests on. And who do we have here in the studio with us tonight?
We have with us some members of La Sociedad Mutualista Cuauhtémoc, and we have in the studio this evening Tommy Perez, Fred Villanueva, Diana Price, and Liz Castañeda.
Almost
close enough. And so we're here. We've invited them to come, and I will tell y'all, when Rob and I first started discussing the program that we were going to do here at the Raíces Show. When we finally came out with the format, and I, my intentions were to have the association be my first program, because for me, as iconic as the organization is, the things that it has stood for, the amount of community involvement that the organization has had, when I look at the time frame that the organization started, when it was very hard for a lot of people who spoke Spanish in this area. To me, I don't think there's any organization that embodies what this show is about. And so I'm glad that you guys have finally made it here. I am delighted that y'all are here. And we'll go ahead and start. If you can tell us the founding date for the organization, where it was founded, how it ended up here in the United States, and how it ended up here in this beautiful town that we live in, San Marcos.
From what we know, our records, and it's a ongoing research that I'm participating in, but from what I've found, in 1906 is when the first, recollection of that history appears. In 1906 is when they had a group of individuals who, first expressed interest in not necessarily forming, but realizing that it was necessary. It was something needed in order for the Mexican history, or I'm sorry, cultural traditions to be able to
continue.
Yes. And so from 1906 through 1912, there was a lot of political
turmoil,
absolutely. There was riots and all kinds of things that had happened. And so from there, the Mexican consulate became involved, and this whole idea of mutualistas is For those of you listening that are not aware of what the mutualistas do, it's basically a mutualistic society who they help. It's about helping each other through community, and so it rose from Mexico into the United States. It is found all over the world, by the way. It's not something that necessarily pertains just to Mexico, but it was a way of helping each other survive. And so mutualistas, helped, they formed like little communities all over the southern United States, and eventually they found themselves here in San Marcos. So the Mexican consulate helped start that organization here with the original founding fathers, founding members of the organization.
And so when we're talking about the time frame that Liz has mentioned, for those of you that don't know, this was the very beginning of the start of the Mexican Revolution. Mm-hmm. And so Mexico went through a very hard time. A lot of the people there were devastated by the continuation of the war that continued to happen. A lot of people that were needy, the starvation that came to the indigenous population of Mexico. And I did not know that it was, in fact, started by the Mexican government. Mm-hmm. So kudos to the Mexican government mm-hmm. for that. Mm-hmm. And I think that the endearing perseverance of the people that have kept this going is something that is very embedded in the Mexican culture.
Absolutely.
And when did the organization come to the United States and to our area?
I'll let Tommy answer that.
Mm-hmm. So this group of people formed La Sociedad Mutualista Cuauhtémoc, and as a place for the Mexican American community to meet. And this was formed in 1942. That's when original came to be La Sociedad Cuauhtémoc, and it was formed as a non-profit organization and turn into a dance hall to create, you know, revenue to make events and get money to continue their project. Right now, La Sociedad is located at 1100 Patton Street and has survived as a venue for all manners of special occasions. For, you know, parties, graduations, quinceañeras, and all that. It started as an open roof, and then people got to know it as La Plataforma back in the days.
Before we had the hall that currently exists, it was just an open venue platform.
Yes, and so that's how they started. And so that's how the Sociedad Mutualista Cuauhtémoc was formed. I do have some of the names of the first
founders.
Yeah, the first board. And it started, the first one was the president was Juan S. Flores. Vice president was Juan Arredondo. And then the secretary was Daniel Rojo. And the treasurer was Crescencio Gonzalez. There's other members, because there was a big group of people that, you know, worked with that. It's a long list for me to read it, but the creation of La Sociedad Mutualista Cuauhtémoc, it was formed to work under one motto, which is union, fraternity, and progress. So it has to be, you know, everyone united to work towards
the better achievement of the good. And so for those of you that are listening, you may recognize some of the names, you may not, but people of my age had the privilege of knowing some of these men. There are two men there that I don't think I knew who they were, but I did know Dr. Rojo, because he was still there in Victory Gardens. He had a office there. Right now, where I guess it's like Casa Maria's, I remember he had like a sliding glass door behind the back part of the office, and so I was very fortunate to get to know Dr. Rojo because my grandmother lived just right down the street from him.
So many of us don't know, you know, all the people who started this were new members compared with the many years that La Sociedad has been here. Mm-hmm. So. But we continue there.
And then, of course, everybody knows Juan Arredondo because they're synonymous in this town. You know, they had Celaya's over on 123, and then they had Arredondo's grocery store, and they had Arredondo's over on 35. So it's just a testament as to how this organization has thrived when we look at 1944 to today. And, Fred, I think you have something you want to say?
Yes, I was going to say that these men that were founders – they're the ones that actually donated the money to purchase, because we have a complete lot. I mean, it's the whole block, in other words, that they bought, and it was just land to start with. Tommy said, it was just land. And then La Plataforma, or the pavement, that was it. And then they had a wooden stage when it started. And it was for, you know, to celebrate our culture, let the people have a place to go.
To congregate, know, for to fellowship.
Correct. Now, I know that 16 September was a big event.
Back then. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to talk about that as we move forward, but go ahead and finish.
But It actually didn't even start at Cuauhtémoc where it is now. It started at Chapultepec Apartments. Mm. Back then, that's where they used to have their events. And then eventually, once they purchased this property and built it up, that's when everything was moved to where we're at, you know.
And so to give a little history about Victory Gardens was platted back in the 1944s, right after 1944, 45, 46, right after the war. And so I'm going to assume that there was probably nothing there in Victory Gardens when they bought that property. They probably bought it probably at a really, really good price back then.
Yeah.
But the money was generated by these men. And I know Dr. Rojo was originally from Mexico. So mm-hmm. I wonder if the thought of the organization came with them when they came, because the majority of the men at that time did come because they were fleeing war-torn Mexico.
Right. Absolutely. They did come from, I would say the majority did come from Mexico. And so they wanted to have a place, you know, to have the people get together and have events and celebrate, especially El 16 de Septiembre. And so I think that was their main function of having that place. And it's been nonprofit ever since. And it's a place that we're all very proud of, you know.
Well, I think... Let me ask you this question. Some of these men that did found it, did you have the privilege to know them?
I got to meet, I knew Dr. Rojo, I knew him. Some of the other ones, I did know him as I was growing up, because I was living a block away from the hall.
So do you grow up on Knox Street? Are you part of the Villanovas that lived in that area?
Yes. And so I didn't, when I was young, I mean, I didn't have to go to the events because I could hear the music all the way to my house. And so and back then, of course, it was open, so it was free, and the parents were willing to let you go. And so I got to enjoy La Sociedad Cuauhtémoc when it was completely open, no roof, you know, nothing like that. And then, of course, they had all those puestos of games, food, and things like that. So I got to see that.
So when were the events? I mean, was it like on Saturday nights, or was it, you know, when do you remember that things were happening there?
Well, actually, the only ones I remember more is 16, because they used to have it for 2 weeks. I don't understand, and I don't know how these men, because it was only men. When it first started, the organization was only men. And I don't know how they were able to have events or dances every night for 2 weeks. They would do it for 2 weeks straight. And the only way that it would be canceled is because it rained, because it had no roof, you know.
Very muddy.
Right. Yeah. And so, but they used to have even parades from downtown San Marcos all the way to the hall.
Well, I saw a photo as I was looking through some of my things, and when I went to the event that they had for the unveiling of the plaque, a lot of the photos that were there of a lot of the people that I've known, and there was a photo of Mr. Esquivel on a horse.
Correct.
And mm-hmm. we had his daughter, Baudelia Arredondo, on the show, and she talked about just the pride that she had in seeing her father on this horse, dressed in his charro outfit,
yes.
You know, riding his horse on the street, you know, and whoever was in the parade, one carrying a Mexican flag and the other one carrying the American flag. And so I don't know. I think that if I could go back in time, I think that's probably something that I would mm-hmm. want to see. Because it's just the way that she painted that picture. It just was amazing. So are we talking back like in the 1950s when this is going on for you, or?
Well, I must have been about in the early 50s mm-hmm. or mid 50s.
And so, what kind of food was sold at this event? Because I'm going to assume that a lot of the things that we do have now were probably part of the menu, but I've seen some people back then got really creative with a lot of the foods that they made. So tell me a little bit about the foods that were sold.
What I recall is they had tamales, they had hamburgers, for sure, and enchiladas. they would roll up those enchiladas. And
was there a red tortilla or the?
Yes, pero they weren't enchiladas the way they do them now, mm-hmm. with the cheese on top. It was just the cheese was inside, but they were rolled up
in the salsa.
And the salsa.
Yeah, that's
yes.
more traditional Mexican. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then of course they had a lot of games for the kids to play, bingo. I mean, there was a lot of stuff to do, and we would walk around the hall all night as kids, you know, because that's what we did. We just walked around, and because there was the only ceiling that they had was inside, with next to the dance area, where the older ladies, mostly ladies, because the men wouldn't sit. But it was mostly ladies, and they would sit and listen to the music and see the people dance, and back then to go dance it was 25 cents.
And do you remember how was the cooking done there? Would they bring it from home, and if it was done there, how would they cook there? Because I know now we have, you know, things like propane and things like that, but you didn't have that back then.
I don't know how they did it, but they did cook there. Mm-hmm. They were cooking there. And because there were permanent booths, mm. these were not taken. They stayed up year round.
I see.
And I recall seeing about 10 of them, you know.
And so there, do y'all have any photographs of that or no photographs?
There is one of La Señora Hernandez. She used to have a little grocery store, Don Gavino. El señor era Don Gavino. Because, like I said, I live in Knox Street. And so that little grocery store, little, you know, it was right across the Cuartemo. And they would have a booth all the time. And there's a picture of her in the booth that we have.
Oh, you're going to have to show that to me. And on that note, we're going to go into a station break.
And you're listening to Rises here on KZSM LP 104.1, San Marcos, Texas. We do this every Sunday night from 7 until 8 o'clock. And as a reminder, views expressed on the show, those are the hosts, the guests, and not necessarily KZSM. We're going to be right back after these announcements.
Partially supported by a grant from the Burdine Johnson Foundation, supporting charitable causes in Hays County and Central Texas.
Support for KZSM comes from the Caldwell Hays Examiner, a nonprofit alternate monthly media outlet attuned to issues of injustice, politics, culture, and art in our bi-county region. Pick up your free copy at local businesses in Caldwell and Hays counties and visit the Examiner online at chexaminer.org.
Hey, let's do the Texas Two-Step. The American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb and Lung Force Walk. It takes place at UFCU Stadium on May 3rd, right here in San Marcos, Texas. Pick your challenge and register to make a difference today. You can do so at fightforairclimb.org/South Texas or lungforce.org/South Texas. We'll see you in those dancing shoes.
Hey, have you heard? KZSM now has the programming all in Spanish. The music in Spanish, all the commercials in Spanish, and the guy even recites poetry in Spanish. Yeah, that's me. I'm El Tio, and the program is called Música con Ganas. Join me every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. on San Marcos' own true community radio, KZSM.org, now broadcasting on 104.1 FM.
I want to ask this question. I was there for the unveiling of the historical plaque that was commemorated there at the Cuauhtémoc. I want to know how the idea came about for applying for the plaque and how long a process it was, who all was involved in doing that. So tell us a little bit
about
that.
Sure. So I'll say this. If it wasn't for Gina Rogers and Irma Gaitan at the time, we wouldn't have even gotten there. They came to the board at the time, and I was honored to be part of the board when this all began. And they were interested in expanding the reach of what the Hays County Historical Commission was doing at the time with their Tejano reach. And so they thought that Cuauhtémoc deserved, Cuauhtémoc's story deserved to be preserved and recognized. And so they came to the board and they asked us if we would be willing to collaborate with them. And of course, it was something that I think many of us had been thinking about. We weren't sure how to get there. And so it kind of got the ball rolling. So the Hays County Historical Commission at the time was who got us started. From there, it did take a couple years. It was not something that was instant, not only because, you know, it's a bureaucracy that we have to go through, but COVID hit at the same time. But because of that, that time that lapsed, during that time, the commissioners decided that they wanted to form their own Tejano Indigenous committee. And they basically asked Gina Rogers to come over and help them. And so I'm not sure what that process was like when they, who was involved with that. But I do know that that plaque, that marker that now, you know, has a permanent place for at Cuauhtémoc Hall wouldn't have been made possible if it wasn't for the Council of Indigenous and Tejano community that exists now with the Hays County Commissioner's Court or Commissioner's I don't even know what it's called, but commissioners. But it will. I can't leave out that the Hays County Historical Commission was also involved at the beginning. So,
well, it is a great honor, I would think. Absolutely. Right?
Yes.
I want to talk about you know, after the people like Mr. Arredondo were gone, and people like Mr. Esquivel, and then the next group of people that came in, and that's probably the group that I know the most about their commitment to the organization. So at this point, when we start to see people like, and I understood that Mr. Reese was also a member, so is he part of the older group or the next guys that come in?
I think it was the second round.
Okay. Yeah, but he did come in as a young man, mm-hmm. and he was a member and president. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, he I think he was president for quite a number of years, mm-hmm. and so him and Señor Mendoza, Señor Gutierrez, Rayos, and there's quite a few people that I recall, you know, members as I was growing up, and so I got to meet them and know them.
So when you talk about Señor Gutierrez, are you talking about Daniel, or are you talking...
Daniel Gutierrez, okay. Yeah. Daniel Gutierrez también fue presidente. He was president. You know, Cuauhtémoc had presidents almost every year. We sometimes elect or re-elect presidents, but... It's had a lot of presence.
And I noticed, I guess I can say that a lot of the people that were there embedded in Cuauhtémoc were people of the neighborhood, because, you know, I go back and I look at these photos and I see Fred Ivarra, mm-hmm. who lived over on Ellis Street. Daniel right. Gutierrez lived there off of Roosevelt, the next street over. Right. I can't remember Eisenhower. I can't remember the name of the street. Chico Street. I can't remember the name of the street. But then I also remember Mr. Garcia and Mrs. Garcia, who lived on a Roosevelt on the corner, mm-hmm. and Mr. and Mrs. Vasquez, who yes. lived on Armstrong Street. And, you know, there's just so many, you know, the list goes on and on and on, but these are the ones that I remember who were the men who, and the women, at that time now, the women are already working the kitchen, they're selling mm-hmm. hamburgers, right. and they've got desserts that are there. But really, for myself, the men that continued the you know, the banner to keep it moving. Do you have any recollection of the things that were going on at Cuauhtémoc at that time when these men were taking over? Because for myself, what I remember the most is these men were always so well put together. The presentation, the way that they carried themselves, they were always dressed very elegantly, sophisticated, starched mm-hmm. shirts, dress shirts, ties, and dress pants. And for myself, this is how I remember them. You know, you have this negative connotation about what Spanish-speaking people or what, you know, what Mexicans are supposed to look like, but these guys did not fit that norm. So what kind of impression did you have from these men?
Well, like you said, they were well-dressed gentlemen and well-spoken, too, because they, you know, they, especially in las fiestas, they would do a presentation, and they gave us a lot of information to us and told us why we were celebrating El 16 and El Grito and all that. And so, those men, I admired them because of that. That, like you said, I got to know them. I got to, you know, meet them because I knew all of them. Yes, el señor Mendoza, especially Apolinar Mendoza, he was a man that, para ser un hombre chiquito, I mean, he was not a very tall man, but he was a very feisty person, y él te decía las cosas como eran.
We'll talk about him in the next segment. But I want to ask you all before we go into that, your affiliation now with the organization. Did you guys join because you had an ancestor who was there before, or what brought y'all to Cuauhtémoc? Tommy, we'll start with you.
So what brought me there? I started going just to the dances and, you know, celebrations for the 16 and things like that. But then I started finding out that it was not just a dance hall, that it was an organization and they did a lot for the community. So that's how I decided to become a member, yes. Because I felt like, you know, I can give a little, but actually give a lot. Because you're going to reach a lot of members of the community being part of the organization. So that's how I started. Yeah. And I've been there for almost 20 years.
Wow. And Fred?
Mm-hmm. Well, I started actually, well, the last 16 celebration that Cuauhtémoc had, my daughter ran for queen, and she was 5 years old. And there was two other little girls, and I think she was the youngest one. The others were either 6 and 8, but they were older than her, I know that. And I got involved with you know, her running for queen and all of that. And so I saw the support that the members were giving each other. And that kind of, you know, opened my eyes to get involved. And so we became members after that, you know, a few years later after that. My daughter's now 35 years old, so that was a long time ago. But actually my daughter, and I don't know if you're, when we were talking about Montalistas, in Texas, there were 7 organizations from all the way from Fort Worth. Fort Worth had 2 of them, Waco, San Marcos, Houston had 2, and Pasadena.
And of those 7, how many are still active?
Well, hold on. So there were actually, at the turn of the century, there were over 300 organizations that were all considered mutualistas or considered themselves mutualistas. However, there was the 8 that Fred is speaking of were the ones that were part of the federation, like an official recognized mutualista organization under the federation.
Right.
And so that's what he's.
And that federation was created here in San Marcos, mm-hmm. By those gentlemen, and I think there's only about, really, I don't know how many are left.
I think it's just about 5 left.
And are we talking about just in the United States or Texas or worldwide?
No, just here in Texas.
Oh, Texas, okay.
There's more all over, like in Mexico and, you know, other places. But the ones that formed the, they were formed here in a sister organization. That's the one that he's talking about. Yeah, mm-hmm. But some of them are, you know, disappear,
and not all of them.
The other ones are still on, celebrated the one in Waco, just celebrated their 90 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of them had been for a long time, mm-hmm. And we continue.
Mm-hmm. Not all of them, however, are have an event center like we do. We were very lucky to be able to have the space that our founders were able to
cultivate, grow,
yes, yeah. and persevere through everything. But so the organization itself, like Mutualista organizations, there might be some still in works. But
and Diana, what brought you to the organization?
Okay, you must know.
Sorry about that. A technical difficulty.
Just hold that mic for me there for just a second, and we'll get that. It just flipped around the wrong way. Going ahead, Diane. Going ahead.
Okay. Actually, I had thought about joining, but I had never actually acted on it. And then Selena Sandoval, which you yep. know previously, she had, you know, asked if, you know, she did it, what I did. And I'm like, okay. So I went ahead and joined along with her 3 years ago. And I've come to find out that it's a lot more that's involved in the organization than just the hall. So that's why.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Liz?
So I've been involved since 2011. I knew about Cuauhtémoc. I have been involved with the community previously. And so I had been to Cuauhtémoc, but, you know, for dances, I've always worked with students, and students had quinceañeras, and they would invite me, so I would go. But I just saw it as an event hall. I didn't know. I'm not from San Marcos originally, so I didn't have that history, that knowledge of the history of the hall. And so I just assumed that it was an event hall. So eventually, I was working at Texas State at the time, and I had made a friend, and she asked me if I would be interested in joining because they wanted
new membership.
a younger membership. At the time, there weren't many of us. And so so I was like, well, I don't understand. Like, what do you mean? And so when she explained a little bit more about what they do, I was like, oh, that's perfect. And she's like, yes, you would be perfect for that. So anyway, so I joined in 2011, got involved, and kind of that's where I can't see myself not being part of the organization. So I'm very grateful.
And with that, we'll go ahead and go into a station break. And you guys are listening to KZSM 104.1 FM.
This broadcast is partially supported by a grant from the Burdine Johnson Foundation, supporting charitable causes in Hayes County and Central Texas.
La familia Mendoza empezar el día oyendo esto. Es algo habitual. Por suerte. Ir al bosque y terminar el día escuchando esto otro. Es posible. Ese respiro que tu familia necesita está a menos de 90 minutos. El bosque, más cerca de lo que crees. Entra en descubreelbosque.org y descubre el bosque más cercano. Un mensaje del Servicio Forestal de los Estados Unidos y el Ad Council.
Anybody out there interested in chess? Join us at the San Marcos Local Chess Club. We get together every Wednesday from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at the San Marcos Public Library. All levels are welcomed. Everybody is welcomed. All ages are welcomed. It's a really chilled environment just to enjoy and play some chess all together.
Talk a little bit more in detail about Mr. Mendoza, Señor Mendoza. I don't think that we can talk about Cuauhtémoc without talking about Mr. Mendoza. And you talked about him being, he was a very small man, very feisty. And I remember from the time that I was about 12, you know, and I would come to these events that they would have there, and I think people were always hoping that you wouldn't give Mr. Mendoza a microphone because he could give you a speech that would last for 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're young, you know, you want to go to this. It's kind of like you say, you want to be running around, but Mr. Mendoza is talking and he was so long-winded. And I remember sometimes I would say, oh, este señor, ¿cuándo va a parar? Because, you know, he would just go on and on and on. but for myself, as I started to grow and I started to listen and to understand, and I would come home and I would say to my dad, you know, what did he mean when he said this? What is all this about? And so as my dad would start to explain these things, and as I started to grow, that I started to pay a little bit more attention, that those things carry with me now. The thing about education, the thing about understanding your rights, the things about family, the things about cultural identity, the things about how we were very unique because we had this banner where we could speak Spanish and speak English at the same time and have two different cultural identities that we could assimilate into something else. To never forget your language, to be proud of the places that you come from. And so I think, even though when I was younger I used to think about him that way, now I see the conversations that he was having in a much different way. And so I wanted to ask those of you that have ever had the opportunity to listen to him speak, what you got out of that, because this is for me what it means. And I don't know, Tommy, you said you've been here 20.
Yes, but I don't remember. I think it was before I became member of the, I think that was before I became member of La Sociedad, so I don't remember that. But maybe
okay, Fred it's up to you.
Fred was.
Well, I did know Mr. Mendoza, and actually his granddaughter, Mary Jane Godina, brought us a whole bunch of pictures of, because he was so well-respected by congressmen, senators here in Texas, that we have pictures of him, you know, giving an award for this or that.
You have seen the pickles of J.J. Pickle.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so he was well-known here in Texas, you know, and respected. Because, like I said, he was a man that spoke his mind. He and like you said, he loved to talk, but what he was saying to you, and you listened to him, made sense of what he was saying. You know, he was clearly focused on what he was saying, and so I really enjoyed talking to him because, and actually, he went with me to Mexico, and in Emilio Noriega, Nuevo León. I don't know if you know that, but there's a bench dedicated to him in that town square that they have. When he went with me, we went to that town, and so I got to see it, and you know. And so,
but Mr. Mendoza, he was from Mexico?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of also knowing one of his nephews who grew up in the household of the Riveras. And so his name was Antonio Rivera. And Antonio's mother was Mr. Mendoza's sister. But she passed away. And so Antonio grew up in the Rivera household. When I say Rivera, I'm talking about Octaviano Rivera's father's household. So, but that family was all like that. You know, if you talk to them, they were all very vocal. They spoke their mind. Tony was the same way, you know, didn't speak a lot of English, but spoke a lot of Spanish and was very clear about what his intentions were and in the things that he said. And so I think it, you know, when you grow up in a household like that, those things just kind of rub off on you like that. You follow in the following footsteps.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Regarding that, the how vocal, I guess our founders had to be at a time where, you know,
oppression,
the oppression, and I mean, they had to have the resilience and the way that they saw themselves being able to fit into any space that they were allowed in, even if it was them, you know, having to fight their way in, was to have to, you know, be properly dressed and be
yes.
able to command that
the respect,
you know. And so, I mean, I think while we say, you know, oh, they were, you know, gentlemen, and they had no other choice. Not to say that nobody, they didn't have to be gentlemen, but I mean, I meant like the dress code and how they presented themselves, how eloquent they spoke. They had to. They had no other choice if they wanted to make a difference.
First impressions, yeah. Right? You exactly. know, first impressions.
Exactly.
And they were leaders in the community. And yes, so yeah. it was almost, yes, you could have just been slovenly. You could have been mm-hmm. off to the side. But they knew that they had to step up.
Exactly.
And so any time that you did not want to be perceived as being weak, you wanted to be able to have that spoken word, and you wanted to be able to fight the local authorities when you needed to for your community.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So exactly. I want to ask this question, because now that we're talking about Mr. Mendoza, and we knew that he was very vocal about the things that he said, he was very passionate. The organization, was it ever really embedded in the politics of the things that were going on? And is that still something that you guys adhere to, or not as much?
I'd like to speak to that. Actually, at the beginning, it was synonymous. Cuauhtémoc and the politics of the time, that's how they expressed themselves. They used that platform of having that nonprofit to be able to express the needs that our community needed or had at the time. And so it was very political. You had the Mexican consulate involved. You had all these men that that were either educated, formally educated, I should say, because we all have knowledge, right? Or were eloquent enough to be able to connect to the people and be able to bring them together. And so they... If you look back at the our articles from the time, you see a lot of that. You see there was the political rallies and political speeches given at the hall. But that was something that they did all the time. And now, for some reason, and I'm sure at the time they made the decision, there was probably a good reason for it. But yeah, so we've kind of separated ourselves from being... A political voice in the community. Whether that's the right call or not, that's not here or there at this point. One thing that we do want to make clear is that we are still here for the Mexican-American community.
Well, I think, too, as we have moved on, right, at that time for them it was a necessity. Mm-hmm. But as we moved on, our kids now, you know, have the availability to get a formal education. Mm-hmm. A lot of them now, they know their rights. They can speak up for themselves. And as you say, you don't have to be formally educated in a university to know the basic rights of what is granted to you in our Constitution, right? So we can advocate for those things. The doors have been opened a little bit more for people of color in this mm-hmm. country. And so I see that sometimes we do that, but we also let our guards down mm-hmm. because we forget the reason why we started. Exactly. But as you say, that's neither here nor there, and that's probably a story for another day. And so I think with that, we'll go into another station break.
All right, and you're listening to Rises here in KZSM, LP 104.1, San Marcos, Texas. Views expressed on the show, those are the hosts, the guests, and unknowns here. Those are KZSM or SMTXCRA. We'll be right back with you after these announcements.
This broadcast is partially supported by a grant from the Burdine Johnson Foundation, supporting charitable causes in Hays County and Central Texas.
Local artist Tawny Bates is bringing her creative energy to the Price Center for a new four-part series of art meetups mixing creativity and the role of a die. Bates is a resident artist at Eye of the Dog Art Center in San Marcos. Her focus is sewing felt stuffies, but she is accomplished in a multitude of media. Participants in On a Creative Roll will dive into different art forms by learning the basics about a specific medium. Artists will then work on a project that will take them through a unique and creative process of using dice to decide the various aspects of that session's project. Bates will hold four sessions on two Fridays in March on the 14th and the 21st from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 in the newly renovated upstairs studio at the Price Center, and will focus on drawing and letting the die take it from there. Two more classes will be held in April. All skill levels are welcome. The classes are free and open to all. However, reservations are recommended. Cash and art supply donations are always welcome. To register, email info@pricecenter.org. For more information about the Price Center and its facilities and services, please call us at 512-392-2900 or stop by the center at 222 West San Antonio Street. We hope to see you there.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I'm Ronnie C.
I'm Joey Karate.
And come check us out at Viva La Ronnie here on KZSM FM. We're on every Friday at 9. We will take you on adventures like no other. Nothing is off limits. We'll talk about aliens, wrestling, love and music. It's a show for the average American to sit down, laugh and learn, or not. Who knows? Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for your support. We love you, and God willing, we'll see you soon. Peace.
So I want to tell you, you know, speaking from the bottom of my heart with all the gratitude that I have for the organization, because my daughter Mercedes was a recipient of one of the scholarships in 2016. And so I want you guys to address the issue with the scholarships and the reason for the Cuauhtémoc.
Okay, so the organization is represented by board members, okay? And we also have committees. And then one of the committees is the scholarship. And this year, Liz is the chair for the scholarship. We have also other committees that we do, and one of them is like festivity that Diana is involved with. And so also we give donations to the community besides the scholarships. So whenever somebody needs help with electric bill, medical bill, stuff like that, we donate money to them to help them out. So that's other areas where the organization's been helping the community.
And I know during the time of the pandemic, you guys were very, very instrumental in using the hall for the things that were needed for the community. So yes, bravo to you guys for that.
And I think, I mean, Liz can give you more information about scholarship and also what happened during the pandemic. And because we, like you said, we were very active on that area and during the pandemic.
So you mentioned you're having a daughter that was a recipient. We take a lot of pride in being able to provide that that little bit of money, even if it doesn't do a lot. At least it helps relieve some stress from the parents and from the students that are receiving them in some form. But throughout the years, we've been increasing that amount that we give as much as we can. You know, we have ran into some issues with like having some hall maintenance done. So right now the hall is undergoing.
So you guys kind of had the same fate that the VFW had, where you were required to come in and to modify.
Update mm-hmm. and modify the building. And so we're going through that. So that has kind of affected where our money is going. But it is one of the main reasons that we exist, and we will continue to make sure that it's at the forefront of what we do.
Well, you have to take care of that hall, because without that hall, there's no funding.
Exactly. So yeah, so we're very honored to be able to do that for the students of San Marcos, and obviously also family members of our current active members are also able to apply for a scholarship every year, and so. We've had the opportunity to give out in the upwards of close to 20,000 every year. During the pandemic, that did fall because we had to close down the hall for most of the year due to that. And Tommy was president at the time, so she felt it very much. So since coming back, we've been able to build the fund back up. And so we're hoping, we're actually meeting about scholarships next week to review and hopefully give out some more funding to our very deserving students. So.
And Rob wants to know about the future as you guys move forward. What do you have in your plans as you move forward for the Cuauhtémoc?
Like as far as like what, I mean, building-wise, maintenance, well, I mean, like remodeling.
The organization is, so you've made it, you know, this has been around now going on over 100 years. Mm-hmm. And here we are in a transition. You've brought in new blood and new members. But you're, you know, those that knew the hall when it wasn't a hall and knew these things, you know, they're passing along. So just you've got the stories, but how do you keep this going? How do you keep the momentum?
Do you have the goals to grow the organization more?
Well, I've been festivities coordinator for the last 6-7 months. My goal is to make, is at least to have events for families to make memories. Like we had our first trunk and treat. We had pancakes with Santa. My deal is to have more events, family-oriented events, to where we can, like you said, tell stories, make more memories. We're having our anniversary dance on July the 5th, and anybody who has pictures over the last 83 years of what they've done with the hall, whether it's pictures of their events, you know, please let me know, contact me, email me. I would love to have them on display for our everyone to see. And the funds that we're raising that we for the cover charge for the dance will go into the hall, maintenance, keeping it up, scholarships, anything that we can to still be here in the next 180 years.
So we all know, you know, hall rental is a large part of how you guys make your money. How much is it now for the hall rental at Buck the Milk?
Currently, the rental hall rent fee is $2,500.
And is that like an all-day thing? How many hours?
That they get it from like 3 to midnight or 3 to 1, whichever they choose. And then that provides security and cleanup afterwards for the after the event.
And they also get to come and decorate.
And decoration. They get like their 3 hours to decorate. And, you know, if they need any assistance or whatever, we're there to help to make it a little easier for them.
Tommy?
Okay, so our mission is to enrich, educate, and give a scholarship to the student. Also helping the community. So we want to continue creating revenue to help the community. We facilitate the whole to other organizations also, and you know, help them to have it their own way of, you know, getting money for their plans for whatever they do. The vision that we have is that we want to welcome, you know, everyone that comes into our hall. And for different events. La Sociedad Cuauhtémoc aims in preserving the Mexican culture and tradition in the United States, our Mexican tradition and for us, right? And we like to provide sense of identity and belonging to everyone that comes into the hall. So every year we have election we're about to have, and you know, we have the president and everything, and in all that we create the committees that we can all take part as an organization to provide what we can to help the community and to make sure that their events are, you know, what they expect. That everything runs smooth, you know, that we're there, and just continue the mission of the Founders.
So tell us the date of the anniversary.
July the 5th.
July the 5th.
Yes.
And do you guys have tickets for sale?
We will have tickets in May to distribute, or they can come by the hall and purchase them.
And that's for the dance?
That's for the dance, and currently we're also doing a raffle for $25 a ticket, and they have an opportunity to win to book an event at the hall for free.
So $25 will possibly get you a $2,500 rental in the hall.
Well, let's get that information to Kathy so we can record a little PSA for you and get that going here if we know that's coming up in May and get you ready for July, okay?
Thank you.
And also want to address, if somebody wants to become a member, what are the qualifications and how do they do that?
Pretty much they just need to donate their time, and I'm the chair for that this year, so they can call me. My phone number is 512-757-5574, and just talk to to me.
And as for Tommy.
As for Tommy Perez, so they can just contact any member, and we'll give them an application, and we can go from there.
So is there a monetary fee that you have to pay? Because I know some organizations do require. So do you guys have a monetary fee?
We ask for a minimum donation of $35, which, you know. But it's, you know, it's just to make it formal and, you know.
That's
but
just it's the cost of a dinner.
Yeah, that's what
yes,
I was
for
thinking.
A year. And as long as they're willing to donate their time, we don't get 1 cent pay for this. It's all donated
volunteer.
Our time.
All
volunteer work. Volunteer. Yes.
So if you're divorced or if you're single and don't have any plans on the weekend, come and hang out with us. And
yes.
At the same time, meet new people. Who knows? Maybe the lucky one.
Yeah, donate your time. You know, have fun, enjoy, and. Yeah.
And so I want to thank you guys for coming on the show this evening. As I said, my intentions were to have you as my first show, but I'm glad you made it. I have some wonderful memories there from dances, quinceañeras, events outside of that. The people there were just loving and welcome, and I have such great memories of the Vasquez's, Señor Gabriel and his wife Luisa, and Señor Daniel. And the Garcias, as I said before, and you know, I'll be amiss if I don't say Mr. and Mrs. Gomez,
yes.
Because they spend so much of their time mm-hmm. there, and Mr. Gomez was just like everybody else there, just dreads to the nines.
Another thing that before we move on or end, I want to make sure that the community knows that we are looking when we talk about where are we going next. In order for us to be able to move, I feel like we need to formalize our history. And so Marker was the first thing to get towards that space. I am working on the dissertation that will help work on that history as well. But mostly what we will be doing as a membership is starting this summer is have more pláticas with the community for everyone who has memories of the hall and want to share them together, like in a plática form. We're going to be hosting those starting this summer.
Okay, so get us those dates. We
absolutely.
Will go ahead and put that PSA out for you guys. I want you to come back once you're done with your dissertation
and
come back and talk to us.
Okay.
And I think Tommy has one last thing to say. Or
I just want to let the public know and everyone that has their family who had been members of the Sociedad Cuauhtémoc, to be very proud, because our organization been lasting for this many years, and it's all because of the dedication of their family and friends. So that's what it takes to keep the organization going. And thanks to everybody. We don't want to, you know, forget anybody, but they know who they are, and they know what they have done for the Sociedad Cuauhtémoc.
And with that, I want to thank you once again. It's been my honor, my privilege, and we will go ahead and end the show on that.
Están escuchando a KZSM LP 104.1 San Marcos, Texas. Verdadero Radio Comunidad.